before I introduce our brother and our speaker and our last speaker for today, it was impressed on me that I was going to do the last service, but somebody else decided to do the last service today. But I sent out the schedules for all the ministry to if they were willing to preach and all that, and it was just a little, trickery of hands or whatever, and it was read wrong, and Dennis was actually supposed to preach in my spot on Saturday, and I was supposed to be the last speaker of the day, but it all fell into place, you know, it all works out, and with that, you know, I've never met Dennis, you know, but I know now I have a new brother, you know, and I got to watch out for him. And somebody told, you know, they told me that he, you know, you look a lot like Joel. And when you first pulled up, I'm like, wow. But, and, you know, I think it's great, you know, how the Lord works, you know. And I never met you guys. I've met Amanda, you know, and she's got a beautiful heart, and I can tell where that heart's coming from. I want to thank you, you know, as parents, that's awesome. And with that, I don't know why the last service is always a difficult one, you know, because we know it's the last service of a reunion, and it's a very special time, and I consider it an honor, you know, to introduce our brother, my new brother, that I've never met before. And with that, I'd like that we, once again, open up our hearts, open up our minds, let everything on the outside world disappear, and let's share some more time with our Lord and Savior. And with that, I'd like to introduce Elder Dennis Drugin.
Thanks, Rich. There's more to that story. It's the eyes that are going on me. I'm not a good reader anyway, but it's even compounds it. I can't see anymore. And I wrote Rich back when he asked me to preach Saturday, and I told him, yeah, I'll be sure. I'll preach for you Sunday. When he got that, he must have said, man, the indignity of that guy telling me when I'm going to preach. Michigan sends their hellos. And if we were in Africa, as Brian knows, they'd go. And they told me to say hello to you guys. And we're very glad to get up this way. I don't know if anybody from Michigan has been out this far west. It's certainly a long ways, as we found out. But we got the last Thursday afternoon, and we thought we just had a quick drive over here. These states are big. Man. We had 900 miles, and it was telling me, one GPS was telling me, oh, 18 hours. And I'm going, I ain't following that one. So the other one had 16 hours. I said, I'm going with that one. It was through the middle of moose territory, and I almost got one. But we made it, and I was glad to get out of that truck. Many of the things that I'm going to talk about, you've already heard. And I was cringing every time our brother Duane would give you a reference, because many of the ideas he had. And I'm saying, oh, please, Duane, just end it, because I don't want to give the same references. Or fortunately, he used most of the different references, but he had the same themes. And a little bit about myself. We've been travelers all of our life. Betsy and I, have been remote members, or what's another name, scattered members, all of our married life, which is 26 years. And we've been overseas for the last 12 years. So we find things a little different when we see things. We look through different eyes. And most of our adult life, we've been overseas. So we've counted it as a blessing that we've been able to do that and see the rest of the world and think a little differently sometimes. And not only that, but we've attended the missionaries throughout most of our life. We've taken an opportunity to join up with the missionaries whenever we could, whenever we had some time off. And it's been that's the highlight of my career. So we always look for those opportunities. And most of that time, all but the last six of those years, I wasn't in the priesthood. But, that really didn't matter much. It didn't to me because we had it easy. We just let Don or Jay do the translating and the preaching, and we just sit back and enjoy. Or in other places where we didn't have an interpreters, we just got to sit back and listen more and enjoy it. And, we'd give our testimonies. We always tried to give testimonies, but we always had something we could do. And so that was a highlight of our tours. Whenever we'd go somewhere, how close we are to this place or that place, and we always enjoyed that. Last 3+ years, we were in India, and that's I'm sure you've been hearing the stories over the last few days. It's a hard place. It's a place you can count on getting sick, and a place it's nothing like the U.S. And you're introduced to idolatry. Right from the word go, signs and statues everywhere you turn. There's only 2% that are not Hindi, something like that. Or sorry, 2% that are Christian. There's probably 20% Muslim in there. So not exactly a fertile ground for us to do missionary work. But a year before I went there, we had some young men, at least three groups, different groups, getting a hold of Buzz and making contact and asking him for missionary. And it just so happened that I was going there the following year, so it presented an opportunity. We presented a platform, at least, for the missionaries, and I started contacting our now brothers out there. And we have, I guess, Dwayne was telling me, three that we're attending. He just was there, and that fluctuates, the groups that we have out there. But it is a different place, and they are a very humble people, very poor. And I've titled this sermon, The Spirit of Belief. And it's my words, and it's just what I see and what I see about those people and people that we've had missionary dealings with overseas. I'll talk more about that. But when we travel these places, we've noticed a real difference in these third world countries. They all seem to have this, what I call, spirit of belief that we may not see in your daily lives. And I'll give you an example. When we were in India, Dwayne will tell you that we may have a service of maybe as many as 60, 80 people, counting the kids, and maybe 100, 100 and some. Depends on where we're at. But after the service, if somebody asks, they know about this, they ask for administration. And when they do this, they come out of their houses. And you may have, we got to divide up. You can't do it two at a time, because you'll be there until after the service, and you're not going to get anything to eat. So you divide up as many elders you have, and you each take a person. And you may have 60, 80 people come and ask for administration. You have to be specific on what they're asking for, but, they want some of that. And I've heard the local churches will actually charge them for the oils and things, and some of them have a bottle of oil there. And so somebody's making market of these people. But they all want this thing, and they all believe they're going to get a blessing. And something you wouldn't see here, is it? That you wouldn't see that in the States. They just want to believe this. They have a desire, let's put it that way, they have a desire to want the things of God and the blessings of God. And that's not only in India, but more so in these countries like that I've seen down in the Yucatan and in Africa. They have a desire, a great desire for the things of God. And, people in the States might tell you they want those things, but, with their voices they tell you that, and with their actions they say they don't. I see a similar story in the Book of Mormon. In page 417, follow along because you'll find I'm not the best reader, and I like to add words, and I like to take a few away, and to where it suits me. And I'm not the best speaker either, but I have been blessed with an analytical mind at least, so I can give you something. 417. And we'll go four verses there. 88. Now when they had come into the land, behold, to their astonishment they found the Zoramites had built synagogues, and that they had gathered themselves together on one day of the week, which they did call the day of the Lord. And we don't know if this was Saturday, or it probably was. They probably held to the Saturday tradition, and they met in their synagogues, and that's a name for a Jewish church where the temple's not. And they did worship after the manner which Alma and his brethren had never beheld, for they had at a place built up in the center of their synagogue, a place standing, which was high above the head, and the top thereof would only admit one person. Now, when we travel down through the Yucatan and Guatemala and those places, you do see a lot of those kind of places that they can talk to the crowd. Some of them are extremely steep, so they can reach out. The crowd can come right up to there, and they can talk to the people. And the one that they had here was just slender enough, and I haven't seen one that slender, but it was slender enough just one person could go up there. Therefore, whosoever desired to worship must go forth and stand upon the top thereof and stretch forth his hands towards heaven and cry with a loud voice, saying, Holy, holy God, we believe that thou art God, and we believe that thou art holy, and that thou was a spirit, and thou art a spirit, and that thou wilt be a spirit forever. Holy God, we believe that thou hast separated us from our brethren, and we do not believe in the traditions of our brethren, which was handed down to them by the children of their fathers. But we believe that thou hast elected us to be thy holy children. Let me read just a little bit of 92. And also thou hast made it known unto us that there be no Christ, but thou art the same yesterday, today, and forever, and thou hast elected us that we shall be saved. You know, if he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, where did they get this strange belief? Because the beliefs that they had from their traditions taught them this wasn't the proper worship. And it did teach of a Christ. By this time, they may have not had much contact with the plates of brass, but certainly those prophets predicted of a Christ. And it's interesting that they believed in that they were the ones going to heaven. And I did a little study on people that believe they're going to heaven, you might find it surprising that 90% of the people out there in the United States believe in a heaven. And not only that, 85% of those believe they're the ones going to be there. You know, so it's the same type of thing. Everybody else, you know, I'm going to heaven. They believe it. And it kind of flies in the face of the Matthew scripture that says, you know, that he never knew these people that were prophesying his name. And then he goes on to tell us that only few find the way. So I don't believe this 85% of the 90 is going to heaven. I really don't. That's not the way I understand the scriptures. But that's a common belief. Everybody's going to heaven. And we see that even in our day. Let's read on this sermon here. And 101 to 103. Next page. Yea, and he also saw their hearts were lifted up unto great boasting in their pride. And he lifted up his voice unto heaven and cried, saying, How long, O Lord, will thou suffer that thy servants shall dwell here in the flesh, to behold such gross wickedness among the children of men? Behold, O God, they cry unto thee, and yet their hearts are swallowed up in pride. You know, that's another study I did a while ago. It was, you know, we're told that the plain and precious things, a lot of them were removed from our holy scriptures. And I started to analyze what was the differences between the Bible and the Book of Mormon. And I found that pride was grossly misrepresented in the Bible. You may be surprised, I was, that you only find the word pride in the New Testament three times. That was surprising to me. Word pride, only in the New Testament three times. And in the Book of Mormon, I did a quick count, and you came up with 61 times. So grossly disproportionate that these had it. And not only that, but I found in the new translations, they've added the word pride or to be proud is a good thing eight times. So almost three times more prevalent to be prideful. You want to be proud of yourself. You want to take pride in the things you do. Those are the scriptures that have been added. Three times more prevalent than the negative ones, the three negative ones. And, you know, so I think there's been an attack on pride. And it's not, and it's being taught that it's a good thing. And it's really a tool of the devil. And when you think about the word pride, what does that pride mean? And pride is all about self-love. It's just the opposite of what the Lord is looking for. He's looking for love of thy brother, not self-love. He wants us to be love our brothers, doesn't he? Not this self-love. Let's continue on and take a look at 122 through 128. Same sermon to these people. And it came to pass that after much labor among them, they began to have success among the poor class of the people. For behold, they were cast out of their synagogues because of the coarseness of their apparel. Therefore, they were not permitted to enter into their synagogues to worship God, being esteemed as filthiness. Therefore, they were poor. Yea, they were esteemed by their priest as dross. And that's the, when you have metal, the part that's removed is the dross. Therefore, they were poor as things to the world. And also, they were poor in heart. Now, we've heard about that poor in heart today, haven't we? They were poor in heart. And now, as Alma was teaching and speaking unto the people upon the hill of Anada, there came a great multitude on him, which were those that we have been speaking, which were poor in heart, because of their poverty as to the things of the world. So that poor in heart gives us an opportunity, and it opens up the way for the Lord. Pride is a separation. And humbleness or a poor in heart gives the Lord an opportunity to work. 125. And they came unto Alma, and one of them, which was the foremost of them, saith unto him, Behold, what shall these my brethren do? For they are despised of all men because of their poverty, yea, and more especially by our priests. For they have cast us out of their synagogues, which we have labored abundantly to build. So even these people were the ones building them, weren't they? They put these laborers out to build them. Now they couldn't enter them because they're poor. Continue on. With our hands. And they have cast us out because of this, our exceeding poverty. That which we have no place in worship our God. And behold, what shall we do? And now when Alma heard this, he turned to him about, and his face immediately turned him, and beheld with great joy. Now that doesn't sound right. Alma hears that they have great poverty and they can't worship at all. And he says, oh, you know, he looks on that with great joy. You know, he's so happy that these people are poor. And it goes on to tell why he has this great joy. It sounds a little coarse, but it's what our minds ought to be conditioned for. For he beheld that their afflictions had truly humbled them, and that they were in a preparation to hear the word. One more verse. Therefore, he did say no more to the other multitude, but he stretched forth his hand and cried unto those which he beheld, which were truly penitent. And he saith unto them, I beheld that ye are lowly in heart, and if so, blessed are ye. And that's what we're seeing out in the world today, you know. When we go out to these places, it's every time it seems like, you know, we baptize as many as 30, 40 people out in Africa and the Philippines. It's a little more sparse, but every time I went to India, we've had 5 or 6 that we baptized. And it's just, they're very poor in heart. And they desire and they have a spirit of belief. They want to believe the things that you're telling them. And they want some of these blessings, and they want the things of the Lord. And it's the same with these people. They've been driven down, they were humbled, and now they were willing to, they were having success among them. I did some more research, and I found that the broken heart and contrite spirit that we find in the Book of Mormon here, we find it 9 times. How many times do you think we find broken heart and contrite spirit in the New Testament? Absent, 0. Humbleness, or humble as a root word, we only find it 16 times in the New Testament, 82 times in the Book of Mormon. I think there's, and I didn't bother doing any research in the New Testament or the New Translations, but I'm sure the attack continues. Let's turn over and continue on with this. 423 page. 151 through 153. But behold, if you awake and arouse your faculties, even to experiment upon my words, and exercise a particle of faith, yea, even if ye can no more than desire to believe, let this desire to work within you, even until you believe in a manner that you can give a place for a portion of my words. Now we will compare the word to a seed. Now if ye give place, that seed may be planted in your heart. Behold, if it be a true seed or a good seed, and if you do not cast it out by unbelief, that ye resist the Spirit of the Lord, behold, it will begin to swell within your breasts. You know, I love these verses here that tell us that, you know, a desire is the most essential part here to believing. And if they had that desire, and these people do out there, they desire these things. That is what is required. And the faith can grow within. And the Lord can do some work among those that desire this thing. And not only that, it goes on. The hope that we have is the same thing. And, you know, I found it to be true that people believe the desires of their heart. And I found it to be a true thing. Let me repeat that. People believe the desires of their heart. And I'll explain that in just a second. But Paul calls hope an anchor. And there's in the Book of Mormon, they also call it an anchor. I think hope is a rudder. In my own mind, hope keeps us on track to where we want to go. Hope is where we hope to be at, what we want in life. And that's why one of the verses say we're saved by hope, because it's that focus in our life, our desire in our life that saves us, because it's where we're going to go and where we want to go. And I did another study, and I looked at the Muslims, you know, and I picked out a group in Britain in my research, and I wanted to see if these things I had heard rumor that were true. I had heard that they had a hard time believing the Holocaust. And sure enough, I found the statistics. Educated people in the British education system, so we're not talking these fundamental Iraq and Iran, we're talking England. They believe, 29% of them believe the actual Holocaust happened, as reported. Only 29%. 17% will say, okay, it didn't happen like that, but we believe that some sort of Jewish problems happened there. 17%. The rest did not believe the Holocaust happened. Most Muslims in England do not believe that the Jews were killed in World War II. They don't believe it. And these are educated in the British society. 45% believe that 9/11, how it happened, was a plot with the U.S., with Israel, and blew up our own tower. We did it. To gain sympathy for the Zionist movement. 45%. Not of Iraq or Iran. These are British citizens. Believe that. Muslim British citizens. Why do they believe that? How could they believe that? Because they want to believe it. That's the desires of their heart. Their hearts are full of hatred. And that's what they believe. So we, you know, it tells us where we've got to go with that, don't we? Where's the desires of our hearts? 451. Not there. 68 and 69. The one on the one hand and the other on the other. The one raised to happiness according to his desires of happiness or good. Keep an eye on, keep listening for the word desires. According to his desires of good. And the other to evil according to his desires of evil. For as he has desired to do evil all the day long, even so shall he have his reward of evil when the night cometh. And so on the other hand, if he hath repented of his sins and desires righteousness until the end of his days, even so shall he be rewarded with unto righteousness. He gives us rewards of our heart, whatever our desires are. You know, you can't get up there and say, you know, I really wanted this, Lord. And, you know, if he casts us out, we've got what we really were after. You know, that we've got what our hope was in this life. So we have to make sure our hope is true. Page 186, please. You know, this... This prophecy of and Jacob here is really truly a great prophecy. It's one of the clear as any prophecies I've ever written on the future of the world, the future of the gospel, the future of just about Israel. It's just so full, and so many authors have quoted this. You know, we have Lehi use this thing, and we're told that by Nephi, and Nephi used it. And then Jacob, he thought it was so important, and I'm glad he did, that he included the Zenus right in one of his chapters here. And he didn't have chapters, but amongst his writing here. And he thought it was so important, and I'm so glad he did. And I'd like to read some of that. And 136 through 145. And it came to pass, this is in the latter part of this prophecy, at the very end that I'm reading. And it came to pass that the Lord of the vineyard, and he sent his servants. And his servant went and did as the Lord commanded him, and brought other servants, and they were few. So we have some calling outs of servants. And we know this is the ministers of Jesus Christ, and they were few. And the time period would be 1829, 1830, that men were being called into the service again. 137. And the Lord of the vineyard saith unto them, Go and labor in the vineyard with all your mights. And behold, this is the last time that I shall nourish my vineyard. For the end is nigh at hand, and the season speedily cometh. And if ye labor with your mights with me, ye shall have joy in the fruit which I shall lay up unto myself against the time that soon the time which soon come. And it came to pass that the servants did go to it and labor with their mights, and the Lord of the vineyard labored with them. And you know, let me just pause there. You might say, how did he do that? How did he labor with them? And we see it, you know, we see it out there before we even go. As you all know, you know, before we ever had our work in the Yucatan, 50 at least years before that, he sent angels down there to tell them, these events are going to happen, and when you do, you're going to know that my servants are coming. And you're going to be able to identify them, that our words are true. So he began nurturing the field in the vineyard 50 years before we even got there, I think it was. Not only that, but he did it in Africa. He gave Brian a witness that the place that he had thought it was in the Yucatan was actually in Africa. And they're calling us out there. We're not calling them. We're not just going out there. They are asking for the Church of Christ to visit them. And the reason they're doing that is the Lord is going before us. And I have a few examples in India that I've seen. Our brother, one of our brothers, gave me a dream, and he said he seen himself, and he was cutting out paper images. And he was cutting these things out, and then he saw the white missionaries come. And he gave those cutouts to the white missionaries. And they took those pieces of paper and they took them into the water and they brought them back out and they became real people and they were alive. It didn't take much to analyze that dream. You know, we gave them a few scriptures about how they go down into the water and they become up a new creature and now they're alive in Christ. And I told him that since you were cutting them out, that you'd be, I think that was at Sonder that actually told us that, Sonder. And he's very active in the church right now. Another dream that our brother had, a different brother had, and it was Sherat that had this one. And he's the one that speaks English there. And he's been told, and we, those that have been down there know why he's been told this dream. He was given a dream, and he was in front of this tree, and it was a multicolored tree. And it had multicolored fruit. And he said he ate it, and it was the most wonderful thing he had ever ate in his life. And he went to take another one, and the angel forbid him, whoever it was. Said, you can't. And then he pointed to a box. And the box was below a tree. And that box had a book in it. And he says, he looked at the book and he opened it up. And the first part was blank. Or that was his words. And the middle part had writing on it. And the back part was blank again. Now that had me going for a number of months. I knew it was the Book of Mormon, but I'm used to the Tree of Life having white fruit. But when he had the dream a second time, I got busy looking up some scriptures because he had the dream twice. And I found in Revelations there where the Tree of Life had multi-fruit on it. And I started thinking about the book that was there, and I thought, you know, I told him, I says, you know, the first part of their record of the Book of Mormon, the plates are stacked like this. The first half of that, the first part of that, the 162 page or whatever it is that they interpreted, that was taken from us. We don't have that record today. In the last part that's on this gold leaves, the last part is the ether. And we don't have that part. And that was a sealed portion that remains sealed to this day. And that was my best interpretation of that. But I told him, the salvation that you're going to have to that tree of life comes through the Book of Mormon, brother. And you better get reading it. So he's still a member. He's our interpreter down there. And we still chide him that he doesn't read enough. But he knows it. I mean, there's no words that, you know, when the Lord tells him a dream, there is nothing else that we can do. We can talk all day and night to these people, but when the Lord talks to them, you know, they better believe it. It's, you know, it comes right straight to their heart, and they know it's true. And now it's up to them. Another witness that we've seen that I'll talk about, you know, I talked about administration. I had one brother that was in the hospital, and when you go in the hospital, they're good luck, because when you go in there, he had a bleeding. They couldn't stop the bleeding or something like that, blood, and they didn't know what was wrong with him. They had no doctors around. He was laying on this bed. There was nothing there but a bed, and he feared the worst. We went in there and administered to him, and we didn't hear anything more about it until the next time we came. And, you know, that was one of the brothers that wanted to be baptized the next time because he was healed, and he knew the power of God. And so he wanted some of that. So, you know, those are the things that the Lord goes before us. And part of verse 140 again. And they did obey the commandments of the Lord of the vineyard in all things, and they begin to have natural fruit again in the vineyard. And the natural branches begin to grow and thrive exceedingly. And the wild branches begin to plucked off and cast away, and they did keep the root and the top equal according to strength thereof. You know, that's something that we don't really get a fathom on. You know, we hear this, and the Lord tells us he's going to do the clearing away. That's not up to us. That's up to the Lord. And he says a lot of times, they have to be removed in order for somebody else, like Ether's group, had to be removed from that spot of land so that the Nephites and Lamanites could have it. And we hear the same thing here. The bad has to be cleared away in order for the good. And he says he's going to keep these things equal. There has to be turmoil out there for in order for the church to be successful, is what he's telling us. So I do not pray that these things go away. I do pray that brothers and sisters are helped, but I do not pray that we don't undergo problems, because he's telling us here we need these times of trouble in order to be successful in the church. And the things of this earth are not important. They're vanity, as we've heard. And thus they labored with all diligence, according to the commandments of the Lord of the vineyard, even until the bad had been cast away out of the vineyard, and the Lord had preserved unto himself the trees thereof, had become again natural fruit. And they became unto one body, and the fruit were equal. And the Lord of the vineyard had preserved unto him the natural fruit, which is more precious unto him from the beginning. And it came to pass that when the Lord of the vineyard saw the fruit was good, and the vineyard was no more corrupt, he called his servants and saith unto them, Behold, for this last time we have nourished my vineyard, and beholdeth that I have done according to my will. No more corrupt. That's where this thing's going. That's the promise to this church. You know, we look at that big field out there of people, and we just don't know how we're going to do it. At least I do. And then, you know, you think of these stories, and you think how the Lord works. And then you realize he's going to get it done. You know, There is no doubt in my mind. He's going to get it done. And not only that, but it's going to fill the whole earth, this Church of Christ. And there's no other church, and I believe this with all my heart, that there's no other church out there that fulfills the Church of Christ. It's us. We're going to convert the whole world. It says pretty much the same thing in the second chapter of Daniel. We know that that little stone cut without hands hits this image and then becomes a great mountain, and that's the kingdom of God. And I note that that image doesn't fall on itself, does it? But that image is not destroyed until the missionary effort of our church. And that's when the image falls. And then it's just like this over here. As the bad is cast away, the church grows. What about the U.S.? How's that happen? What's the story on the U.S.? People like to know that. Let's take a couple of looks at what they started off, and Duane read this, page 36 in the Book of Mormon. Our beginnings, our very beginnings. Maybe I'll go with 34 is a better reference. I don't know if he read this one or not. Let me look at 151, 152. And I beheld the Spirit of the Lord, and it was upon the Gentiles. And they did prosper and obtain the land for their inheritance. And I beheld that they were white and exceedingly fair, like unto my people before them, before that they were slain. And it came to pass that I, Nephi, beheld that the Gentiles, which had gone forth out of captivity, did humble themselves before the Lord, and the power of the Lord was with them. This is before the Church of Christ here. And the people were humble. And the Lord says that the Spirit of God was upon the Gentiles. So he worked with these early Americans, and he could work with them. And the reason he could work with them is they were humble before them. They were vessels that he could work with. That's our beginnings. Let's move through a little bit of time here. Let's take a look at the Bible in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 7. And Paul is talking in this prophecy, and my title says "The Coming Apostasy," right in the heading of my Bible, and it says, "And this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come." So that sets the time frame for us. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud. There's one time we have it's not the word pride, but it's proud. Blasphemers, disobedience to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than the lovers of God. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away. You know, we read those words, and we are told that the day the Book of Mormon came forth, that was that time period, 1830. That was the condition of those people. What is it like now? We certainly haven't got more spiritual in the United States, but he regarded them as evil by nature then. For this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins and led away with divers lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. 4:3. For the time will come that they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lusts shall they heap to themselves teachers with itching ears. A little cryptic, but what it's telling us is, if you don't like what the minister's saying here, just go somewhere else. So you're going to find eventually what your desires are. You know, you're going to find a church that will tell you what you want to hear. There's enough of them out there. And that's what he's talking about here. They don't endure sound doctrine, but they're after what somebody will tell them that it's okay if you do that. Just come do whatever, whatever you want to believe, it's okay. There are churches out there that will tell them that, as long as they're supporting that church. I got an uncle that was I wasn't planning on telling this, but he said he was he was the note left on his seat there at the church, and it said, please don't come here anymore, because his money wasn't there. You know, he wasn't supporting that church, so they didn't want him come anymore. And, he could listen to the message and be told that as long as he supported that church. But page 146, we're going to see if that really applies to the United States or not. Page 146. Verses, it's 2 Nephi 11, 89 through 92. And it says this. And it's come to, right up above there, it talks about the coming forth of the Book of Mormon. And it says this. And it should come to pass that they which have dwindled in unbelief and shall be smitten by the hand of the Gentiles. Well, guess who that was? Who was smiting those Indians? And the Gentiles are lifted up in the pride of their eyes and have stumbled because of the greatness of their stumbling block. And that's the lack of the Book of Mormon, and the pureness of the gospel was removed. That they have built up many churches. Nonetheless, they have put down the power and miracles of God and preach up unto themselves their own wisdom and their own learning, that they may get gain and grind upon the face of the poor. And their many churches are built up, which caused envy and strifes and malice. Strife is contention for superiority. Malice is extreme enmity of the heart, hatred. We see those same things talked about amongst us in the United States. Take a look at 646. It's 3 Nephi 7, and we're going to read 32 through 34. I've got here. But woe saith the Father unto the unbelieving Gentiles, for notwithstanding that they have come forth upon the face of this land. So we know where we're talking, don't we? And they have scattered my people, which are the house of Israel, and my people, which are the house of Israel, have been cast out among them, and they have been trodden under feet by them. And certainly we did put them in we had the tale of many tears out there, and we have many stories of the reservations. I think it applies to this. And because of the mercies and of the Father unto the Gentiles, and also the judgments of the Father upon my people, which are the house of Israel. Verily, verily, I say unto you, that after all this, I have caused my people, which are the house of Israel, to be smitten, and to be afflicted, and to be slain, and to be cast out among them, and become hated by them, and become a hiss and a byword. And thus commanded the Father that I should say unto you, that at that day when the Gentiles shall sin against my gospel and reject the fullness of my gospel, that's the gospel of Christ as we present today, and shall be lifted up in the pride of their hearts above all nations. There's only one nation that fits that bill. There's only one that can be on top, and that's not the top of the pile that we want to be on. Pride above all nations, and above all peoples of the whole earth, and shall be filled with all lies, deceits, and all mischiefs, and all manner of hypocrisy, murder, priestcrafts, and whoredoms, and secret abominations. That's us. Why is it us? And how can we judge if that's now? You know, has that came forth? And he tells us he's going to take the gospel from among the Gentiles. Let me read it. And if they shall do all these things and reject the fullness of my gospel, behold, saith unto the Father, I will bring the fullness of the gospel from among them. And it tells us that he's going to send, let me read it here. He tells him, verse 40. But if they will not return unto me and hearken unto my voice, I will suffer them. Yea, I will suffer my people, O house of Israel, that shall go amongst them and shall tear them down. And I think that's in front of us, still that tearing down. So for me, I keep my eyes on the border. And I've believed this for many years, and I've heard preachers. You know, the problems, the Indians are coming up. And Betsy has some articles that she has that when Mitch happened down there a few years ago, they just came over the border in droves. And I think his people are among us. And I think, I keep my eyes out. But I think, and there's another sign out there that are we in this time period? And there, I keep my eye on the elections. And, I keep my, what is it? You know, I've been looking. What is it that we know when we've crossed that line? When we are this people that he's talking about here? And for many years, we've cared about the things like, the Christians would vote their conscience on homosexuality, on abortion. In recent years, what has been the number one issue? What is it? What is it? You know, Clinton said this. It's the economy, stupid. You know, over and over in the Book of Mormon, they go through this vicious cycle. And our brother talked about, he paid somebody to read the Book of Mormon, and they said, man, the Lord keeps correcting those people, don't they? The two things they said about the Book of Mormon. He would bless them. They'd get all the things they needed. They'd become extremely wealthy. What would happen next? Serve the Lord? No. What would happen next is they become prideful and corrupt. And then he would send in the Lamanites to destroy them and to bring them back to humility. And then they would become, once they became humble, the Lord would bless them again. A vicious circle. That's the United States to me, that we became so rich. You know, I know that a lot of you don't see that because you've seen the same thing all your life, but you have the best here that anywhere in the world. The best, you know, in Europe, you think of Europe's like us. Well, in Europe, all the cities, they live in a little bitty apartments about a third of this size, and that's their home, and that's where they live. You have big homes, and you have single-family homes, and, all of you have two cars and so forth, and our brothers down there would not believe what we have, you know, our brothers around the world. We're just filled with riches. You know, kings would give up all their kingdom for the things we have. A running car, hot water, a bathroom is set up the way we have. You know, it's just we're the richest people ever lived. And it brings about a problem because we're so rich. We have, everybody has a satellite dish, everybody has cable, everybody has this and that. It distracts our time. It also has the effect in the world of becoming prideful. And we read the scriptures here, no other nation surpasses us in that. What about the church? Last subject of the night. Where does that leave us? Well, we just read that we have a great responsibility out there. No other work more important ever in the world than the one we have. You know, and we're going to bring this gospel to the world. We're going to be converting the whole world. And I think that's this generation. You know, people want in their eulogies, I just gave a funeral of different things that they were proud of in their life. I never want it read on mine that I accomplished something at work or I did this great thing, you know, invented this great thing. You know, these are all vain things. You know, the only thing that's important in this life is this gospel. It's the only thing that's not vanity. And we read about that vanity in Ecclesiastes, didn't we? In the work, you know, we read about... time is short, so I won't. Maybe I will. Maybe I will. Let's turn over to Corinthians. I just have a couple more readings. Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 12, 8 through 12. We read about the church. I know you're all familiar with these gifts of the Spirit, but I'll read them. For one is given the Spirit of the word of wisdom, another a word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another the gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another divers tongues, to another interpretation of tongues. And it tells us that he gives each, you know, does he give them all to our brother over there? No. He gives them to each members. All the members are given gifts. That they do these gifts, you know, in the church, that they function, you know. They, our sister may have great faith. One is given the gift of preaching. To another, prophecy. You know, so all of these are meant to us to be able to be mindful of our brothers, to come together, to gain strength. Because if one isn't there that has the arm, you know, he compares it to a body. And if our arm's not there, we're incomplete, aren't we? So he gives each of these gifts that we rely on each other. And so we all have a work to do, every one of us. I don't care if you're an apostle or a you know, an elder, what you are. You know, our sisters are very strong in the church. They've always been the strongest. And, you know, they testify. We give our testimonies, and they are an essential process to us all. So we all have a work, not just the missionaries. And then I go, and they talk about the each of them are prophets and teachers and so forth. And then 31 says this on the next page of mine. But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way. That left me curious. Turn over to 14, chapter 14, verse 39. It says this, wherefore, brethren, covet to prophesy, and forbid not to speak with tongues. You know, I got thinking about that. And I says, well, you know, for years I used to think these gifts I got at my confirmation, the gift of the Holy Ghost, you know, it gave me certain gifts at that time. And I got thinking, you know, that was it. But, you know, that flies in the face of that verse. I think, and also it talks about the talents. Flies in the face of that one also. So I got thinking about that. I said, you know, I don't think that's true. I think the Lord could bless us with gifts at any time and add to our gifts. And I do believe that's true. And let me give you a couple of verses. And page 399 in the Book of Mormon. we of the church have a great responsibility, you know. But I think I really felt strong that I was to include that we have to reach, that we have to raise our game. We have to become on a higher level. That we have to be more spiritual, especially what is coming up. We've got a population of that in the church, and if we're going to raise it to the whole earth, you know, it's just so immense. And we can't do it on our own. And we have to raise our game. And we have to be in touch. And we have to have more of His Spirit to be present. And we have to have more gifts. Page 399 in verse 101. And that I'll give you that. It's Alma 14. And we're going to read 101 through 103. Behold, He did exercise His justice upon them. But in His great mercy hath brought us over to everlasting Golgotha, death and misery, even unto the salvation of our souls. And now, behold, my brethren, what natural man is there that knoweth these things? I say unto you, there is none that knoweth these things, save it be the penitent. Same thing we're hearing here. The Lord cannot work with us unless we're humble people. Yea, he that repenteth and exerciseth faith and bringeth forth good works and prayeth continually without ceasing, unto such is given the mysteries of God. Yea, unto such it shall be given to reveal the things which never have been revealed. That's the key. If you want those things, do that. You know, it's not a one-time shot at your baptism. If you want to know the mysteries of God, it tells you clear without ceasing. Talk to the Father. Tell Him you need those things to help His church. Likewise, a couple more scriptures. Let's take a look at page 362. And that should be the 12th chapter of Alma. Just verses 4 and 5. For they were men of a sound understanding, and they had searched the Scriptures diligently, that they might know the Word of God. That's what we're told, isn't it? Isn't that Timothy that tells us to search, study to show ourselves approved? But this is not all. They were given to themselves in much prayer and fasting. Therefore, they had the spirit of prophecy and the spirit of revelation. And when they taught with power and authority, even with the power and authority of God. Therefore, most important word in that one, they fasted and prayed much. That's why they had prophecy and that's why they had revelation. It's within our means. If we want those things, and we do need those things, it's within our means to do this. Therefore, the Lord will be desirous. He wants to give us these things. But we got to reach down and do the things that He asks us to do. 371. Just a couple verses. And that is the 12th chapter also. And just one verse out of that, 113. And a portion of the Spirit dwelleth in me, which giveth me knowledge and also power, according to my faith and desires. There's that key word, desires, hope, which are in God. Where's our desires? Where's our hope? And my favorite, I'm going to close with one more reading. It's become my favorite reading. And it tells us so much of the mind of God, I think. In page Moroni, in page 768. It kind of puts this together for us. It's almost, for me, it's almost the verse that explains it all. It says, I'll read 52 and 53. Wherefore, cleave unto charity, which is the greatest of all. For all things must fail, but charity is a pure love of Christ, which endureth forever. And whoso is found to possess it at the last day, it should be well with them. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, pray unto the Father with all thy energy of the heart, that he may fill thee with this love, which he hath bestowed upon all who are true followers of his Son, Jesus Christ, that he may become the sons of God, and we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is, that we may have this hope, that we may be purified, even if he is pure. That's got to be our hope. Our hope is to become just like Christ. And if we main our focus, if we main that rudder to become just like Christ, and we've got to pray continually, don't we, towards that. It says, pray unto the Father all the energy of their heart. That's got to be our hope, our anchor, our focus is on towards that goal, to become just like Christ. That's why we're saved by hope. And that's why charity is so important to us, because that is the true Jesus Christ. And we want to become just like him, and becoming just like him purifies us. And that's what we have to pray for every day, that we become more like Christ. Thank you for your time.